He tightened his finger until the skin shone white in the candlelight. The trigger moved backward, a 1/16 of an inch, then an 1/8. "You want to die, Hack?" Walker nodded.
"Yes. Please," he whispered.
"Tell me first," Reacher said. "Make it right. Where is she?"
"I don't know," Walker said.
He stared at the muzzle. It was so close his eyes were crossing. The candle flames were reflected in the polished nickel. Reacher sighed and slackened his finger and lowered the gun all the way back to the tabletop. It hit the wood with a quiet sound. Nobody spoke. And nobody moved until Rusty's hand came up with the tiny revolver in it. She raised it in a wavering circle, and it finished up, pointing at nobody in particular.
"Sloop wouldn't hit a woman," she whispered. "Those were all riding accidents."
Reacher shook his head. "He beat Common for 5 years, Rusty. Almost every day they were married, until he went to jail. Broke her bones, and split her lips and bruised her flesh. And that was after raping and torturing and murdering 25 human beings at night in the desert 12 years ago." She trembled wildly.
"No," she said, "that isn't true."
The gun wavered unsteadily. "Point that thing at me and I'll shoot you," Reacher said. "Believe me, it would be an absolute pleasure." She stared at him for a second, and then crooked her arm and touched the gun to the side of her own head, just above her ear. The metal penetrated her lacquered hair like a stick thrust through a bird's nest. She kept it there for a long moment, and then pulled it away and turned and twisted in her chair and moved it again and brought it level with Hack Walker's forehead, with the muzzle no more than 2 inches from his skin.
"You killed my boy," she whispered.
Walker made no attempt to move. He just nodded very slightly.
"I'm sorry," he whispered back.
No revolver has a safety mechanism, and a Colt Detective Special is a double-action pistol, which means the first half of the trigger's travel clicks the hammer back and revolves the cylinder under it. And then, if you keep on pulling, the hammer drops and the gun fires.
"No, Rusty," Reacher said.
"Mom?" Bobby called. The hammer clicked back.
"No!"
Alice shouted. The hammer tripped, the gun fired. There was colossal noise and flame, and the crown of Walker's head blasted backward into the candlelit gloom. It just came off like a lid and splintered into mist. Colt super autos with hollow points, Reacher's subconscious mind told him. The flame died abruptly, and he saw a blackened hole between Walker's eyes and his hair on fire from the muzzle flash. Then Rusty fired again. The second bullet followed the first, straight through Walker's head. And he went down, and Rusty kept the gun rock steady in the air above him and fired into space. 3, 4, 5, 6. The third shot splintered the wall, and the fourth hit the Coleman lantern and shattered its glass, and the fifth hit its kerosene reservoir and exploded it over a 10-foot square of wall. It blew sideways and ignited with a bright flash, and the sixth shot hit the exact center of the flames. She kept on pumping the trigger even after the gun was empty. Reacher watched her finger flexing, and the hammer clicking and the cylinder stepping around obediently. Then he turned and watched the wall. The kerosene was thicker than water and had more surface tension. It flung outward and dripped and ran and burned fiercely. It set the wall on fire immediately. The dry old wood burned with no hesitation at all. Blue flames crept upward and sideways, and the faded red paint bubbled and peeled ahead of them. Tongues of flame found the vertical seams between the boards and raced up them like they were hungry. They reached the ceiling and paused momentarily and then curved horizontally and spread outward. The air in the room stirred to feed them. The candles guttered in the sudden draft. Within 5 seconds, the wall was burning along its full height. Then the fire started creeping sideways. The flames were blue and smooth and curled and liquid, like they were sculpted out of something wet and soft. They glowed with mysterious inner light. Flakes of burning paint were drifting on hot currents and landing randomly. The fire was creeping clockwise, very fast, coming around behind everybody in the room. "Out!" Reacher shouted. Alice was already on her feet, and Bobby was staring at the fire. Rusty was sitting absolutely motionless, still patiently working the trigger. The clicking of the firing mechanism was lost behind the crackle of the flames. "Get her out!" Reacher shouted.
"We've got no water!" Bobby shouted back. "The well pump won't work without electricity!"
"Just get your mother out!" Reacher shouted. Bobby stood completely still. The flames had found the floorboards. The paint bubbled and peeled outward in a wide arc, and the fire started a patient journey in pursuit. Reacher kicked chairs out of the way and lifted the table and overturned it on top of the flames. They died under it and then detoured neatly around it. The ceiling was well alight. Walker's body was sprawled on the floor near the window. His hair was still on fire from the muzzle flash. It smoked and smoldered with flames of a different color. The fire had found the door frame. Reacher stepped across and pulled Rusty out of her chair, spun her around, and straight-armed her through the smoke and out of the room ahead of him. Alice was already in the foyer. She had the front door open. Reacher could feel damp air sucking in to feed the fire. It was keeping low, down by his feet. It was already a strong breeze. Alice ran down the steps to the yard, and Reacher pushed Rusty after her. She clattered down and staggered out onto the wet dirt, and got steady on her feet and just stood there, still holding the empty gun straight out from her shoulder, still clicking the useless trigger. Walker's Lincoln was parked next to the Jeep, wet and dirty and travel-stained. Reacher ducked back inside the foyer. It was filling with smoke. It was pooling near the ceiling and crowding downward in layers. The air was hot and paint was scorching everywhere. Bobby was coughing hard near the parlor door. The parlor was already a mass of flame, an inferno. The fire was curling out of the door. The door itself was on fire. The red-framed mirror cracked in the heat, and Reacher turned and saw two of himself staring back. He took a deep, spluttering breath and ran toward the flames and grabbed Bobby by the wrist, twisted his arm, and grabbed the back of his belt like he was arresting him and ran him out into the darkness, hustled him down the steps, and shoved him toward the center of the yard.
"It's burning down!" Bobby screamed. "All of it!"
The windows were alive with yellow light. Flames were dancing behind them. Smoke was drifting through the screens, and there were loud, random cracking sounds from inside as timbers yielded and moved. The soaked roof was already steaming gently.
"It's burning down!" Bobby screamed again. "What are we going to do?"
"Go live in the barn," Reacher said. "That's where people like you belong." Then he grabbed Alice's hand and ran straight for the Jeep. 17. When the storm moved north, the driver knew his partners weren't coming back. It was a sensation so strong it took on the weight of absolute fact. It was like the rain had left a void behind that would never be filled. He turned in his chair and stared at the motel room door. Sat like that for minutes. Then he stood up and walked over and opened it. Looked out into the parking lot, focusing left, focusing right. The blacktop was streaming with water. The air smelled sharp and clean. He stepped outside and walked 10 paces in the dark. There was a running gutter somewhere, and the gurgle of street drains and loud dripping from the trees. But nothing else. Nothing else at all. Nobody was coming. Nobody was ever going to come again. He knew it. He turned around. Wet grit slid under his shoes. He walked back. Stepped inside the room and closed the door gently behind him. Looked over at the bed. Looked at the sleeping child in it.
"You drive," he called. "North, okay?"
He pushed her toward the driver's door and ran around the hood. She pulled her seat forward, and he racked his backward, unfolded the maps on his knees. To his left, the red house was burning fiercely. All the windows were bright with flame, both floors now. The maid ran out of the kitchen door wrapped in a bathrobe. The light of the fire caught her face. There was no expression on it.
"Okay, let's go," he said.
She slammed the selector into drive and gunned the motor. The transfer case was still locked in four-wheel drive, and all four tires spun and scattered wet stones, and the car took off. She slewed past Walker's Lincoln, made the right under the gate without pausing, accelerated hard. He turned his head and saw the first flames appear at the eaves of the roof. They licked outward and paused, and ran horizontally, searching for sustenance. Steam was pouring off the soaked shingles and mixing with smoke. Rusty and Bobby and the maid were watching it drift, hypnotized. He glanced away and didn't look back again. Just stared ahead, and then riffed through the maps on his knees and found the large-scale sheet showing Pecos County in its entirety. Then he reached up and clicked the dome light on.
"Faster," he said. "I've got a real bad feeling about this."
The 4 hours were long gone, but he waited anyway. He felt a certain reluctance. How could he not? He wasn't a monster. He would do what he had to do for sure, but he wasn't going to enjoy it. Exactly. He walked over and opened the door again, and hung the Do Not Disturb tag on the outside handle, closed the door, and locked it from the inside. He appreciated the locks motels put on their doors, a big lever to turn on the inside, a satisfying heavy click, smooth and oily, no corresponding catch on the outside. It helped. Absolute, undisturbed security was a useful thing. He slipped the chain on and started into the room. Alice drove as fast as she dared. The Jeep wasn't a great road vehicle. It rolled too much and rocked violently from side to side. The steering was vague. It required constant correction. It was a problem. But Reacher ignored it and just held the map high where it caught the light from the roof console. He stared hard at it and checked the scale and held his finger and thumb apart like a little compass and traced a circle.
"You done any tourist stuff around here?" he asked.
She nodded at the wheel.
"Some, I guess. I went to the McDonald Observatory. It was great."
He checked the map. The McDonald Observatory was southwest of Pecos, high up in the Davis Mountains.
"That's 80 miles, he said. "Too far."
"For what?"
"For them to have been today. I think they'll have been a half hour from Pecos by road, max. 25 miles, 30 tops.
"Why?"
"To be close to Walker. He might have planned on smuggling Carmen out if necessary, or maybe bringing Ellie in to see her, whatever it took to convince her that the threat was real. So I think they'll have holed up somewhere nearby.
And near a tourist attraction?
Definitely, he said. That's key.
Can this work?
She asked.
Finding the right place in your head?
It's worked for me before.
How many times? As a percentage?
He ignored the question, went back to the map. She gripped the wheel and drove, dropped her eyes to the speedometer.
Oh, God,
she whispered. He didn't look up. What?
We're out of gas. It's right on empty. The warning light is on.
He was quiet for a second. Keep going, he said. We'll be okay. She kept her foot hard down.
How? You think the cage is broken?
He looked up, glanced ahead. Just keep going, he said.
We're going to run out,
she said. Don't worry, he said. She drove on. The car rocked hard. The headlights bounced ahead of them. The tires whined on the streaming blacktop. She glanced down again.
It's right on empty, Reacher,
she said.
Below empty.
Don't worry, he said again.
Why not?
You'll see. He kept his eyes on the windshield. She drove on as fast as the Jeep would go. The engine was growling loud. A gruff old straight six drinking gasoline at the rate of a pint every minute. Use two-wheel drive, he said. More economical. She wrestled with the drivetrain lever and wrenched it forward. The front end of the car went quiet. The steering stopped fighting her. She drove on. Another half mile, then a mile. She glanced down at the dash again.
We're running on fumes, she said.
Don't worry, he said, for the third time. Another mile. The engine stumbled and coughed once and ran ragged for a second, and then picked up again. Air in the fuel line, he thought, or sludge dredged up from the bottom of the tank.
Reacher, we're out of gas,
Alice said. Don't worry about it.
Why not?
Another mile. That's why not, he said suddenly. The right edge of the headlight beam washed over the ragged gravel shoulder and lit up a steel-blue Ford Crown Victoria. It had four VHF antennas on the back and no wheel covers. It was just sitting there, inert and abandoned, facing north.
We'll use that, he said. It'll have most of a tank. They were well organized.
She braked hard and pulled in behind it.
This is theirs? Why is it here?
Walker left it here.
How did you know?
It's pretty obvious. They came down from Pecos in two cars, this and the Lincoln. They dumped the Lincoln here and used the Ford the rest of the way. Then Walker ran away from the Mesa, put the pickup back in the barn, drove the Ford back up here, retrieved his Lincoln, and came back down in it for our benefit, to make us think it was his first visit, if we happened to be still alive and looking.
What about the keys?
They'll be in it. Walker wasn't in the right frame of mind to worry about Hertz losing a rental car. Alice jumped out and checked, gave a thumbs up. The keys were in it. Reacher followed her with the maps. They left the Greer's Jeep with the doors standing open and the motor idling through the last of its gas. They got into the Crown Vic, and he racked his seat back and she pulled hers forward. She fired it up, and they were on the road again within 30 seconds, already doing 60 miles an hour.
It's 3/4 full, she said, and it drives much better.
He nodded. It felt low and fast and smooth, exactly like a big sedan should. I'm sitting where Al Eugene sat, he said. She glanced at him. He smiled. Go faster, he said. Nobody will stop you. We look just like a squad car. She accelerated to 75, then 80. He found the dome light and clicked it on and returned to the maps.
Okay, where were we? He said.
The MacDonald Observatory, she said. You didn't like it?
He nodded. It was too far out. He tilted the map to catch the light, stared hard at it.
Concentrate, Reacher. Make it work, if you can.
What's at Bull Marais State Recreation Area? He asked. It was still southwest of Pecos, but only 30 miles out. The right sort of distance.
It's a desert oasis, she said. Like a huge lake. Very clear. You can swim and scuba dive there.
But not the right sort of place.
I don't think so, he said. He checked northeast, up to 30 miles out. What about Monahan's sandhills?
4,000 acres of sand dunes? Looks like the Sahara.
That's it? And people go there?
It's very impressive.
He went quiet and checked the map all over again. What about Fort Stockton? He asked.
It's just a town, she said. No different than Pecos, really.
Then she glanced across at him.
But old Fort Stockton is worth seeing, I guess.
He looked at the map. Old Fort Stockton was marked as a historic ruin, north of the town itself, nearer Pecos. He measured the distance, maybe 45 miles.
Possible.
What is it, exactly? He asked.
Heritage site, she said. An old military fort. The Buffalo soldiers were there. Confederates had torn the place down. The Buffaloes rebuilt it. 1867, I think.
He checked again. The ruins were southeast of Pecos, accessible from Route 285, which looked like a decent road. Probably a fast road. Probably a typical road. He closed his eyes. Alice raced on. The Crown Vic was very quiet. It was warm and comfortable. He wanted to go to sleep. He was very tired. Wet spray from the tires hissed against the underside.
I like the old Fort Stockton area, he said.
You think they were there?
He was quiet again another whole mile.
Not there, he said. But nearby.
Think about it from their point of view.
I can't, she said. I'm not like them.
So pretend, he said. What were they?
I don't know.
They were professionals, quiet and unobtrusive like chameleons, instinctively good at camouflage, good at not being noticed. Put yourself in their shoes, Alice.
I can't.
She said again. Think like them. Imagine. Get into it. Who are they? I saw them and thought they were a sales team. Rusty Greer thought they were social workers. Apparently, Al Eugene thought they were FBI agents. So think like them. Be them. Your strength is you look very normal and very ordinary. You're white, and you look very middle class. And you've got this Crown Victoria, which, when it's not all tricked up with radio antennas, looks like an ordinary family sedan. The FBI con helped, but basically, you looked harmless enough that Al Eugene felt safe to stop for you, but also somehow commanding enough that he also had to, wanted to. So you're ordinary, but you're respectable and plausible. And businesslike.
Okay.
But now you've got a kid with you. So what are you now?
What?
Now you're a normal, ordinary, respectable, plausible, middle-class family.
But there were three of them.
He was quiet if he kept his eyes closed. One of the men was an uncle, he said. You're a middle-class family on vacation together in your sedan. But you're not a loud Disneyland type of family. You're not in shorts and brightly colored T-shirts. You look quiet, maybe a little earnest, maybe a little nerdy, or maybe a little studious. Maybe you look like a school principal's family, or an accountant's. You're obviously from out of state, so you're traveling. Where to? Ask yourself the same question they must have asked themselves. Where will you blend in? Where's the safest place around here? Where would an earnest, studious, middle-class family go with their 6.5-year-old daughter? Where's a proper, enlightening, educational kind of a place to take her? Even though she's way too young and doesn't care. Even though people laugh behind your back at how politically correct and cloyingly diligent you are.
Old Fort Stockton, Alice said.
Exactly. You show the kid the glorious history of the African-American soldiers, even though you'd have a heart attack if she grew up and wanted to date one. But you're driving a Ford, not a BMW or a Cadillac. You're sensible, which means not rich, basically. Careful about your expenditure. You resent overpaying for something. Motels, just as much as cars. So you drive in from the north, and you stay at a place far enough out to be reasonable. Not the dumps in the middle of nowhere, but on the first distant fringes of the Fort Stockton tourist area, where the value is good. He opened his eyes. That's where you would stay, Alice, he said.
It is?
He nodded. A place where they get plenty of earnest, striving, not rich middle-class families on vacation. The sort of place that gets recommended in boring AAA magazines. A place where you fit right in. A place with lots of people exactly like you. A place where you won't stand out in anybody's memory for a second. And a place where you're only 30, 35 minutes from Pecos by a fast road. Alice shrugged and nodded all at the same time.
Good theory, I guess, she said. Good logic. Question is, were they following the same logic?
I hope so, Reacher said, because we don't have time for a big search. I don't think we have much time for anything. I'm getting a bad feeling. I think she's in real danger now. Alice said nothing. Maybe the others were supposed to call in regularly, he said. Maybe this third guy is about to panic.
So it's a hell of a gamble, he said nothing. Do the math, she said. A 45-mile radius gives you a circle over 6,000 square miles in area, and you want to pick one tiny pinpoint out of it?
He was quiet again, another mile. Roll the dice, Reacher. I think they were pretty smart and careful, he said. And their priorities were pretty obvious. They were looking at the same maps we are. So I think that's how they'd have done it.
But are you sure?
He shrugged. Can't ever be sure, he said. But that's how I'd have done it. That's the trick, Alice. Think like them. Never fails.
Never?
He shrugged. Sometimes. The sleeping crossroads hamlet was dead ahead. The school, the gas station, the diner. Pecos straight on, old Fort Stockton to the right.
Well?
She asked. He said nothing.
Well?
She asked again. He stared through the windshield.
Decision?
She said. He said nothing. She braked hard and skidded a yard on the soaked road and came to a complete halt right on the melted stop line.
Well?
Roll the damn dice, Reacher. Make the turn, he said. The driver decided to take a shower first. An excusable delay. He had time. The room was locked. The child was fast asleep. He stripped off his clothes and folded them neatly and placed them on his chair, stepped into the bathroom, pulled the shower curtain and set the water running. Then he unwrapped a new bar of soap. He liked motel soaps. He liked the crisp paper packets and the smell when you opened them. It bloomed out at you, clean and strong. He sniffed the shampoo. It was in a tiny plastic bottle. It smelled of strawberries. He read the label. Conditioning shampoo, it said. He leaned in and placed the soap in the porcelain receptacle and balanced the shampoo on the rim of the tub, pushed the curtain aside with his forearm, and stepped into the torrent. The road northeast out of Echo was narrow and winding and clung to a hilly ridge that followed the course of the Coyonosa Draw. Now the big Ford was no longer ideal. It felt oversized and soft and ungainly. The blacktop was running with water flowing right to left across its surface. Heavy rills were pushing mud and grit over it in fan-shaped patterns. Alice was struggling to maintain 40 miles an hour. She wasn't talking, just hauling the wallowing sedan around an endless series of bends and looking pale under her tan, like she was cold. "You okay?" he asked.
"Are you?"
she asked back. "Why wouldn't I be?"
"You just killed 2 people, then saw a third die and a house burned down."
He glanced away. "Civilians." "Water under the bridge," he said. "No use dwelling on it now."
"That's a hell of an answer."
"Why?"
"Doesn't stuff like that affect you at all?"
"I'm sorry I didn't get to ask them any questions."
"Is that all you're sorry for?"
He was quiet for a second. "Tell me about that house you're renting," he said.
"What's that got to do with anything?"
"My guess is it's a short-term kind of a place. People in and out all the time, not very well maintained. My guess is it was kind of dirty when you moved in."
"So?"
"Am I right?" She nodded at the wheel.
"I spent the first week cleaning."
"Grease on the stove? Sticky floors?"
"Yes."
"Bugs in the closets?" She nodded again. "Roaches in the kitchen?"
"A colony," she said. "Big ones."
"And you got rid of them?"
"Of course I did."
"How?"
"Poison."
"So tell me how you felt about that." She glanced sideways.
"You comparing those people to cockroaches?"
He shook his head. "Not really. I like cockroaches better. They're just little packets of DNA scuttling around doing what they have to do. Walker and his buddies didn't have to do what they did. They had a choice. They could have been upstanding human beings. But they chose not to be. Then they chose to mess with me, which was the final straw. And they got what they got. So I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. I'm not even going to give it another thought. And if you do, I think you're wrong." She was quiet for another twisting mile.
"You're a hard man, Reacher," she said.
He was quiet in turn. "I think I'm a realistic man," he said. "And a decent enough guy, all told."
"You may find normal people don't agree."
He nodded. "A lot of you don't," he said. He stood in the warm water long enough to soak all over, and then he started on his hair. He lathered the shampoo into a rich halo and worked on his scalp with his fingertips. Then he rinsed his hands and soaped his face, his neck, behind his ears. He closed his eyes and let the water sluice down over his body. Used more shampoo on his chest, where the hair was thick. Attended to his underarms and his back and his legs. Then he washed his hands and his forearms very thoroughly and carefully, like he was a surgeon preparing for a procedure.
How far now?
Alice asked. Reacher calculated from the map. 25 miles, he said. We cross I-10 and head north on 285 toward Pecos.
But the ruins are on the other road, the one up to Monahan's.
Trust me, Alice, they stayed on 285. They wanted access.
She said nothing.
We need a plan, Reacher said.
For taking this guy?
She said.
I wouldn't have a clue.
No, for later, for getting Carmen back.
You're awfully confident.
No point going in expecting to lose. She braked hard for a corner, and the front end washed wide. Then the road straightened for 100 yards, and she accelerated like she was grateful for it.
Habeas corpus, she said. We'll go to a federal judge and enter an emergency motion. Tell the whole story.
Will that work?
It's exactly what habeas corpus is for.
It's been working for 800 years. No reason it won't work this time. Okay, he said.
One thing, though.
What?
We'll need testimony, so you'll have to keep this one alive. If that's not too much to ask.
He finished washing and just stood there in the warm stream of water. He let it flow over his body. He had a new thought in his head. He would need money. The others weren't coming back. The killing crew was history. He knew that. He was unemployed again. And he was unhappy about that. He wasn't a leader. He wasn't good at going out and creating things for himself. Teamwork had suited him just fine. Now he was back on his own. He had some money stashed under his mattress at home, but it wasn't a whole lot. He'd need more, and he'd need it pretty damn soon. He turned around in the stall and tilted his head back and let the water wash his hair flat against his scalp. So maybe he should take the kid with him back to L.A. Sell her there. He knew people. People who facilitated adoptions or facilitated other stuff he wouldn't want to inquire too closely about. She was what? 6½? And white? Worth a lot of money to somebody, especially with all that fair hair. Blue eyes would have added an extra couple of grand, but whatever, she was a cute little package as she was. She might fetch a decent price from people he knew. But how to get her there? The Crown Vic was gone, but he could rent another car, not like he hadn't done that plenty of times before. He could call Pecos or Fort Stockton and get one brought down first thing in the morning. He had no end of phony paperwork. But that would mean some delivery driver would see his face. And the kids. No. He could hide her in the woman's empty room and bring the rental guy into his. But it was still a risk. Or he could steal a car. Not like he hadn't done that before either, long ago in his youth. He could steal one right out of the motel parking lot. He eased the shower curtain aside and leaned out for a second and checked his watch, which was resting on the vanity. 4:30 in the morning. They could be on the road by 5. 2 hours minimum before some citizen came out of his room and found his car gone. They would be 100 miles away by then. And he had spare plates. The California issue from the original LAX rental, and the Texas issue that had come off the Crown Vic. He got back under the shower and straightened the curtain again. His decision was made. If there was a white sedan out there, he would take it. Sedans were the most common shape in the Southwest, and white was the most common color because of the sun. And he could keep the kid in the trunk. No problem. A Corolla would be best, maybe a couple of years old. Very generic. Easily confused with a Geo Prism or a dozen other cheap imports. Even traffic cops had a hard time recognizing Corollas. He could drive it all the way home. He could sell it, too, as well as the kid, make a little more money. He nodded to himself, smiled, and raised his arms to rinse again. 10 miles south and west of Fort Stockton itself, the road curved to the right and switchbacked over the top of the ridge, then fell away down the far slope and ran parallel to the big canyon draw for a spell. Then it leveled out and speared straight for the I-10 interchange, which was represented on the map like a spider, with 8 roads all coming together in one place. The northwest leg was Route 285 to Pecos, which showed up on paper as a 90-degree left turn. There were maybe 20 miles of it between the Fort Stockton city limit and a highway bridge that recrossed the Coyonosa Draw. "That's the target area," Reacher said. "Somewhere in those 20 miles. We'll drive north to the bridge and turn around and come back south. See it like they saw it." Alice nodded silently and accelerated down the slope. The tires pattered on the rough surface, and the big soft car pitched and rolled. She woke up because of the noise of the shower. It drummed against the tiles on the other side of the wall, and sounded a little like rain coming down on the roof again. She pulled the sheet over her head, and then pulled it back down, watched the window. There was no lightning anymore. She listened hard. She couldn't hear any more thunder. Then she recognized the sound for what it was. The shower was running. In the bathroom. It was louder than hers at home, but quieter than her mom's. The man was in the shower. She pushed the sheet down to her waist, struggled upright, and sat there. There were no lights on in the room, but the drapes weren't drawn, and a yellow glow was coming in from outside. It was wet out there. She could see raindrops on the window and reflections. The room was empty.
"Of course it is, silly," she said to herself. "The man is in the shower."
She pushed the sheet down to her ankles. Her clothes were folded on the table by the window. She crept out of the bed and tiptoed over and stretched out her hand and took her underpants from the pile, stepped into them, pulled her T-shirt over her head, threaded her arms through the sleeves. Then she took her shorts and checked they were the right way around and put them on, pulled the waistband up over her shirt and sat down cross-legged on the floor to buckle her shoes. The shower was still running. She stood up and crept past the bathroom door very quietly, because she was worried about her shoes making noise. She kept on the rug where she could, stayed away from the linoleum. She stood still and listened. The shower was still running. She crept down the little hallway, past the closet, all the way to the door. It was dark back there. She stood still and looked at the door. She could see a handle and a lever thing and a chain thing. She thought hard. The handle was a handle, and the lever was probably a lock. She didn't know what the chain thing was for. There was a narrow slot with a wider hole at one end. She imagined the door opening. It would get a little ways, and then the chain would stop it. The shower was still running. She had to get the chain thing off. It might slide along. Maybe that was what the narrow slot was for. She studied it. It was very high. She stretched up and couldn't really reach it. She stretched up taller and got the flat of her fingertips on it. She could slide it that way. She slid it all the way sideways until the end fell into the hole. But she couldn't pull it out. The shower was still running. She put her other hand flat on the door and flipped her toes over until she was right up on the points of her shoes, stretched until her back started to hurt, and picked at the chain with her fingertips. It wouldn't come out. It was hooked in. She came down off her toes and listened. The shower was still running. She went back on her toes and kicked and pushed against them until her legs hurt and reached up with both hands. The end of the chain was a little circle. She waggled it. It moved up a little. She let it down again, pushed it up, and picked at it at the same time, and it came out. It rattled down and swung and hit the door frame with a noise that sounded very loud. She held her breath and listened. The shower was still running. She came down off her toes and tried the lock lever. She put her thumb on one side and her finger on the other and turned it. It wouldn't move at all. She tried it the other way. It moved a little bit. It was very stiff. She closed her mouth in case she was breathing too loud and used both hands and tried harder. It moved some more, like metal rubbing on metal. She strained at it. It hurt her hands. It moved some more. Then it suddenly clicked back all the way. A big click. She stood still and listened. The shower was still running. She tried the handle. It moved easily. She looked at the door. It was very high, and it looked very thick and heavy. It had a thing at the top that would close it automatically behind her. It was made from metal. She had seen those things before. They made a lot of noise. The diner opposite her school had one. The shower had stopped. She froze, stood still, blank with panic. The door will make a noise. He'll hear it. He'll come out. He'll chase me. She whirled around and faced the room. The I-10 interchange was a huge concrete construction laid down like a healing scar on the landscape. It was as big as a stadium, and beyond it, dull orange streetlights in Fort Stockton lit up the thinning clouds. Fort Stockton still had electricity, better power lines. Alice kept her foot hard down and screamed three-quarters of the way around the interchange and launched northwest on 285. She passed the city limit doing 90. There was a sign, Pecos, 48 miles. Reacher leaned forward, moving his head rapidly side to side, scanning both shoulders of the road at once. Low buildings flashed past. Some of them were motels.
"This could be entirely the wrong place," Alice said.
"We'll know soon enough," he replied. He turned the water off and rattled the curtain back and stepped out of the tub, wrapped a towel around his waist and used another to dry his face, looked at himself in the misty mirror, and combed his hair with his fingers, strapped his watch to his wrist, dropped both towels on the bathroom floor and took two fresh ones off the little chrome rack, wrapped one around his waist and draped the other over his shoulder like a toga. He stepped out of the bathroom. Light spilled out with him. It fell across the room in a broad yellow bar. He stopped dead, stared at the empty bed. Inside 3 minutes, they had passed three motels, and Reacher thought all three of them were wrong. It was about guessing and feeling now, about living in a zone where he was blanking out everything except the tiny murmurs from his subconscious mind. Overt analysis would ruin it. He could make a lengthy case for or against any particular place. He could talk himself into paralysis. so he was listening to nothing at all except the quiet whispers from the back of his brain. And they were saying, not that one. No. No. He took a dazed, involuntary step toward the bed, like seeing it from a different angle might put her back in it. But nothing changed. There was just the rumpled sheet, half pushed down, half pushed aside. The pillow, at an angle, dented with the shape of her head. He turned and checked the window. It was closed tight and locked from the inside. Then he ran to the door, short, desperate steps, dodging furniture all the way. The chain was off. The lock was clicked back. What? He eased the handle down, opened the door. The Do Not Disturb tag was lying on the concrete walk, a foot from the doorway. She'd gotten out. He fixed the door so it wouldn't lock behind him and ran out into the night, barefoot, wearing just his towels, one around his waist and the other like a toga. He ran 10 paces into the parking lot and stood still. He was panting. Shock. Fear. Sudden exertion. It was warm again. There was a heavy vegetable stink in the air. Wet earth and flowers and leaves. Trees were dripping. He spun a complete circle. Where the hell did she go? Where? A kid that age, she'd have just run for it. As fast as she could. Probably toward the road. He took a single step after her, and then whirled around. Back toward the door, he'd need his clothes. Couldn't chase her in a couple of towels. The low clumps of buildings petered out 3 or 4 miles before they were due to hit the bridge. They just stopped being there. There was just desert. He stared through the windshield into the empty distance and thought of every road he had ever seen and asked himself, are there going to be more buildings up ahead? Or nothing now until we hit the outskirts of Pecos, 30 miles away? Turn around, he said.
Now?
We've seen all we're going to see. She hit the brakes and pulled a violent turn, shoulder to shoulder across the road, fishtailed a little on the wet gravel, and straightened and headed back south. Slower now. He said. Now we're them. We're looking at this with their eyes. Ellie was lying completely still on the high shelf in the closet. She was good at hiding. Everybody said so. She was good at climbing, too, so she liked to hide high up, like in the horse barn. Her favorite place was high up on top of the straw bales. The closet shelf wasn't as comfortable. It was narrow, and there were old dust bunnies up there, a wire coat hanger and a plastic bag with a word on it too long to read. But she could lie down flat and hide. It was a good place, she thought, difficult to get up to. She had climbed on the smaller shelves at the side. They were like a ladder, very high, but it was dusty. She might sneeze. She knew she mustn't. Was she high enough? He wasn't a very tall man. She held her breath. Alice kept the speed steady at 60. The first motel they came back to was on the left side of the road. It had a low, tended hedge running 100 yards to screen the parking lot. There was a center office and 2 one-story wings of 6 rooms each. The office was dark. There was a soda machine next to it glowing red. 5 cars in the lot. No, Reacher said. We don't stop at the first place we see. We'd more likely go for the second place. The second place was 400 yards south. And it was a possibility. It was built at right angles to the road. The office was face on to the highway, but the cabins ran away into the distance behind it, which made the lot U-shaped. and concealed. There were planted trees all around it, wet and dripping from the rain. Possible. Alice slowed the car to a crawl. Drive through, he said. She swung into the lot and nosed down the row. It was 8 cabins long. 3 cars were parked. She swung around the far end and up the other side. 8 more cabins. Another 3 cars. She paused alongside the office door.
Well?
She asked. He shook his head. No, he said.
Why not?
Occupancy ratio is wrong. 16 cabins, 6 cars. I'd need to see 8 cars at least.
Why?
They didn't want a place that's practically empty, too likely to be remembered. They were looking for somewhere around 2/3 full, which would be 10 or 11 cars for 16 cabins. They've got 2 rooms, but right now no car at all. So that would be 8 or 9 cars for 16 cabins. That's the ratio we need, 2/3 minus 2, approximately. She glanced across at him and shrugged, eased back to the road, and continued south. He got a couple of paces toward the door and stopped dead. There was a yellow light off to one side of the lot, casting a low glow over the soaked blacktop. It showed him his footsteps. They were a line of curious, fluid imprints blotted into the dampness. He could see his heels and his toes and his arches, mostly toes, because he'd been running. The prints were filmy and wet. They weren't about to dry up and disappear any time soon. But he couldn't see her footprints. There was just one set of tracks, and they were his, no doubt about it. She hadn't come out. Not unless she could levitate herself and fly, which was impossible. He smiled. She was hiding in the room. He ran the final 8 steps and ducked back inside, closed the door gently and fastened the chain and clicked the lock. Come on out, he called softly. There was no response, but he hadn't really expected one. I'm coming to get you, he called. He started by the window, where there was an upholstered chair across the corner of the room with a space behind it large enough for a kid to hide. But she wasn't there. He got on his knees and bent down and looked under the beds. Not there either. Hey, kid, he called. Enough already. There was a shared bedside cabinet with a little door. She wasn't in there. He straightened up and adjusted his towels. She wasn't in the bathroom, he knew that. So where was she? He looked around the room. The closet, of course. He smiled to himself and danced over. Here I come, honey, he called. He slid the doors and checked the floor. There was a folded valise rack and nothing else. There was a set of vertical shelves on the right, nothing in them. A high shelf above, running the whole width of the space. He stretched tall and checked it out. Nothing there. Just dust bunnies and an old wire coat hanger and a plastic bag from a grocery called Subrahamian's in Cleveland. He turned around, temporarily defeated. The third motel had a painted sign, no neon, just a board hung from a gallows with chains. It was carefully lettered in a script so fancy Reacher wasn't sure what it said. Something canyon, maybe, with old-fashioned spelling. C-A-N-Y-O-N, like Spanish. The letters were shadowed in gold. I like this, he said. Very tasteful.
Go in?
Alice asked. You bet. There was a little entrance road through 20 yards of garden. The plantings were sad and scorched by the heat, but they were an attempt at something. I like this.